evening and welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Brian Cahoot from HJ Wealth Management, co-host Thomas Alvarez from Comprehensive Investment Solutions, fellow CPA. Good to see you, Tom. How are you?
Brian, thank you. How are you?
Welcome to Money Matters. I guess we have to start off with this U.S. economy and all the volatility. Obviously, this show is taped, so we caution the viewers don't react on anything we say tonight, but I guess we should at least address, we've seen a lot of volatility. What are you hearing from your clients and what are you telling them?
Well, I'm hearing a lot of nervous reaction from our clients when they see a 1,000-point swing in the Dow in one day, or actually in an hour. They remember now that risk is here in the stock market. With bottoming out in 2009, we went pretty much on a 5 or 6 year run without much correction. Right? So the volatility we're seeing, I think, is the market taking a breather, letting the economy catch up. Market generally leads the economy, and our clients were concerned that they weren't making enough money in the last year, and so we were managing expectations of higher returns that weren't materializing, and the stock market right now is about where it was last July, that July of 14. So they had valid concern. Bonds are flat, stocks were flat, and they're wondering, am I going to achieve my goals in all of this? And the push from them was, you know, let's do something to make more money, even if it means take more risk. And in the last 2 weeks, those discussions have completely turned around. And they realized that risk management really is the way to build a portfolio. And they're not going to make the kind of returns that stock-only returns produce. Because most people do diversify. So what we're now hearing is, okay, we remember things do go down, and we're glad that we have a diversified portfolio, because as they watched during the decline, they saw that they did not participate in the downside. Of course, everyone's portfolio declined somewhat, but they were fairly well insulated by non-stock holdings. On the flip side, too, they're watching oil go down to a point where, you know, we're looking at potentially $2 a gallon. And from the pocketbook perspective, everyone's feeling some sense of relief. Low interest rates, low energy costs. I don't want to say low taxes, but they haven't gone up in a long time.
Right.
And so from a personal budgeting and finance point of view, people are feeling pretty good.
Yeah, a little more money in their pocket, right?
Exactly.
So. Good. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, we're saying the same thing. If, you know, if you have a long-term investment strategy, it shouldn't have changed overnight because, you know, the Dow did something that you weren't expected to do. That's just the nature of the beast, right? So, we're hearing a lot about China. Everyone's really concerned. They're slowing down, second largest economy. And I think, you know, this has put a lot of fear in. Are you getting questions about China at all?
Not really. People are generally aware of its potential impact globally. And when China slows down, it does impact everyone. But we don't invest directly in China. We quite honestly don't know how or don't have the same latitude we have elsewhere. There are a lot of good opportunities for investing around the world. So China to us is just winds blowing in one way or another affecting the global economy.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I don't think a lot of people appreciate China's stock market is very small, right? I mean, it's the economy dwarfs it, which is usually not the case. So there, you know, it's been in this little bit of a bubble that people were expecting, because there was nowhere, if you lived in China and you invested in China, you didn't have any pick for them. So, but
and they've had tremendous downside in their market, but in spite of that, they're up year to date or on a 1 year period.
Right.
So
yeah.
I mean, they had a huge run up, and they're just giving some back.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone knew they had to slow down, right? It's a pretty big economy to grow at 15% when we're trying to squeak out two.
Right.
It seems
like
just mathematically, they'd slow down. So the other thing we can't avoid hearing every day is the Fed. What are they going to do? Are they going to raise rates this year? Are they going to raise rates next year? I mean, we all know they're going to raise rates. I guess it's when. And I guess the real question is, does it matter? Well, should it matter that they wind up raising rates anytime soon? So.
Well, we've been talking about it and sort of waiting for it for a long time. And they want to make sure the economy can withstand it and not set us back. Yet, the 10-year Treasury rate keeps declining.
Yep.
We thought we had hit the bottom.
Yeah.
Last check it was 2.13, down about 32 basis points from a year ago.
Yeah, people are refinancing yet again.
Right. So a year ago we thought, okay, the rate rise environment is right around the corner. So I'm not sure the Fed will pull the trigger this month. There are a lot of economists that think it would be a mistake, that it's a bit premature with China, you know, slowing down as dramatically as it did. Maybe they will take a pause, but ultimately they have to raise rates.
Yeah.
You know, we've settled into this low rate environment now for, you know, more than half a decade.
A long time.
And those rates really are embedded in our clients' bond holdings.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be a long slog, you know, to get higher yields in our clients' portfolios. So the flip side of that is that inflation's in check. With
right.
energy being cheap, it's going to remain in check for some time. So, you know, inflation sort of keeps interest rates in check and vice versa.
Yep.
So if the Fed does raise rates, we'll welcome it as long as it's timely and slow and steady.
Yes, yes.
which I think then the market has a better chance of absorbing without a lot of shock.
Yeah, that's a good point. What's your outlook? How do you feel good about the U.S. economy, the U.S. market?
Well, I'm not an economist, but I feel really good about the economy. When I look at the charts that come across our desk just in our daily reading, you know, the employment situation is good, inflation is good, job growth is good, housing is improved, manufacturing is improved. I think we're in a much better spot to justify where we are in the market.
Right.
So in my view, the economy sort of caught up to the market. And so this 1 year breather we've had, I think is a healthy thing for stocks. And yeah, I'm very optimistic from this point forward. Although I'll say I'm cautiously optimistic because these global shocks can come at any time and can be pretty severe as we saw last week. So I think the trend is our friend here and we'll continue seeing the economy hopefully make corporations more profit and in turn drive their stock prices up.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've said on past shows, we were more concerned not about stocks, but people stretching for yield, right? Because
mm-hmm.
they do point out bonds and cash pay nothing right now, and people are trying to get creative, and
right.
hopefully they learned that, hey, risk and return come together, right? There's mm-hmm. high-yield products, they're high-yield
right.
for a reason,
right?
So
yeah.
There's some better risk in there,
sure.
so you know, people have to be careful on how they invest and take a look, and
mm-hmm.
you know, and as you're probably saying, a lot of people have their money in 401k plans. That's meant to be a long-term investment vehicle, so it's not something they should be getting in and out, given what the market does day to day. You know, I know philanthropy is near and dear to your heart. I will have a viewer question about it. How do you start the conversation with your clients about philanthropy? Most people will probably either want to do it, but they just never seem to pull the trigger on starting it.
Well, we, you know, embed planning in our services to our clients. So we want to get to know them and what their money story is. Often in just getting to know them, you know, if they are of the type that gives regularly, you'll see it in their budget. So often it's at the budget setting level where we want to understand, you know, their regularity and magnitude of giving. And when we talk about it as a goal, we find that people rank it after needs. And some people after family. So to us, it becomes a matter of them understanding what they can afford. And we encourage them to build charity into their regular giving if they believe in that. And you know, the conversation around can they afford it can come from illustrations that we can provide about their budgeting and their wealth accumulation and whether their savings are going to last their lifetime. And that's a starting point. Then we educate how many different ways there are to give and how charitable giving has so many tax benefits. You know, you can get direct gifts, get a direct deduction. You can give away appreciated assets and eliminate capital gains tax for yourself. You can leave legacy in your estate and save estate taxes if your estate is large enough or taxable depending on the state you live in. And a lot of people fear in their older years they won't have enough assets or income. And there's planned giving that allows people to have their cake and eat it too. Either make a gift to charity that gives them the income and then you leave the corpus for your family, or you know, keep the income for yourself and give away the corpus.
Actually brings us a question from a viewer, Roger Timmons from Erin, asks, like, what are some vehicles that I could use to get me started in charity? I know there's probably a few out there.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we always start people with giveaway appreciated securities first. It's easy to understand, easy to facilitate, and you can generally do that with a charity you're already giving to. If you want to step it up or give to a large charity, and you want to include it in some long-term estate plan or retirement plan, a lot of the large charities have planned giving programs where they help you either set up an annuity-type program where you're giving regularly from the annuity, you know, they provide donor advised funds and support along those lines.
Probably talk to your professional, right? They can get you in the right. Yeah. Great answer. If you have a question for Money Matters, here's how you send it in.
You can have your questions answered on Money Matters. Please go to our website, money-matterstv.com. On our homepage, click on the banner on the right that says, Send Us Your Questions. While you're on our website, you can find information about our host and guests, as well as show notes and links about this show and past shows. Money Matters is also available as a podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, so you can listen to Money Matters while you're on the go. That website address, again, is money, M-O-N-E-Y, dash matters, M-A-T-T-E-R-S-T-V.com.
Welcome back to Money Matters. Now it's time to introduce our special guest, Gwen Borowski. She's the CEO of National Liberty Museum. Welcome to the show, Gwen.
Thank you.
Tell us about the museum. It's right here in Philadelphia.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the museum, its mission. What do you try to accomplish there?
Well, we are a museum about contemporary issues of liberty. And we provide a personal experience for people to come in and telling the stories of heroes and heroines from all nationalities, backgrounds, ethnicities, ages, that hopefully people will find someone who inspires them. And really the goal is to have each person walk out understanding that they too can be a hero in some way.
That's great. How do you support the museum?
Great
question. You've been involved for a long time.
I have,
right? How many years?
Yes, so I've been involved from the beginning. We've been open for 15, but we were actually building our exhibits and raising money to open about 19 years ago. So fundraising is a big topic of conversation in every nonprofit in Philadelphia, and we support our work through fundraising. We get contributions from individuals, foundations, and corporate support, and we have earned income. People come in, they pay an admission fee, although it's very low and is supported. From our gift store, we rent our building for events, and we have a big auction every year.
So we were talking about philanthropy. You're a 501c, I take it?
Yes, so we are, yes.
Donations are tax deductible,
yes,
which is
they
always
are.
Great to hear. Good.
Yes.
So. Who are some of your funders? Are they foundations, governments? Do you get any individual investors, kind of the people we deal with?
Yes. So. Well, the largest number of our investors, which is a great word, are individuals. So we're very fortunate in that way because a lot of people, you know, really support our mission and our work. We do get foundation funding from both large and small foundations. And we also get corporate support. That's both part of our earned income and also corporate partnerships that we work out with different corporations.
That's great. So, and I think you had mentioned off air, there's 90 museums in Philadelphia.
Yes,
that's
very
a lot. So
yes.
Obviously it's very competitive, right?
It
the
is.
Fundraising part.
Yes, it is. But it's also what makes Philadelphia such a great city. There
that's right.
Lots of culture in Philadelphia.
That's good.
So how do you stand out from among the others?
Yeah, well, you have to do a lot of very proactive marketing and be very on message. Something we talk about a lot because a lot of people still don't know us or understand who we are, what we do. So that's a big topic of concern and conversation for us. Although I will say in the education community, the schools, the teachers, school superintendents, et cetera, know us well because we are very well known for our education programs.
Great. With so many museums to pick from, what do investors say, like, why do they support your museum? Have they said why here's what you do that we like the best?
Mm-hmm. I think people, well, anyone who reads the paper and is concerned about the things that they're concerned about, kind of a lapse in civility in everyday life, mm-hmm. Not being able to communicate well and listen to each other with respect, a lack of character and character building in families and communities, and leadership skills. So people are really concerned about that. And I think those are the people we attract who learn about us. When they don't know, they come in and learn about us and are very taken by what we do and the programs we have to mostly teach the next generation those ideals.
That's great. What should people expect when they come to the museum? You had mentioned it's not an artifact museum. It's a different experience than your normal museum. What should they expect when they go?
So people come in, I mean, the word they always use when, or we hear a lot, is inspiring. And we love that word because people read these stories, and we certainly talk about people who are well known. I mean, the Martin Luther King Jr.'s of the world and people like that. But we also tell the stories of so many ordinary people. I mean, people like us, who do something extraordinary, not because they choose to or think about it, they do it. And it turns out having a tremendous impact on other people's lives, and we tell those stories. And I think it's something that people find very inspiring to read the kind of good that's in the world. And it's harder to find that these days.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Your dad, Irv, was the founder, and you worked with him all along.
I did, yes.
So of all of the things that were important to him in his life, why liberty and why this approach to it?
Well, my father was first generation. His parents escaped here basically from Eastern Europe. And he felt such profound gratitude to be an American. I mean, to him that was the most important thing, that this country and the ideals that this country is founded on be protected for each generation. And he really was thinking of his grandchildren. We're a diverse family. We're like a little United Nations in my family, and that's more and more like the United States. And he thought it was really important to for people to understand and kind of welcome differences, both in the family and in communities. And also the kind of opportunities we have here, which he just believed you can't find anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So his work was really focused on, again, communicating those ideals and educating the next generation.
Which is great, because most of us who may be from immigrant families but are next generation don't appreciate the liberty that we were born into, that we take for granted.
Yeah,
the idea of teaching it, passing it along, I think will help future immigrants, and those of us who are here to welcome them will appreciate what it is that we have.
Yes. I mean, I often hear, and it's interesting to see the difference when someone, for example, from Russia comes to visit. I mean, they get it right away. Mm-hmm. As soon as they walk in the door. Mm-hmm. And yet others, as I've heard, you know, Americans, you take this for granted, what you have here. So yes, we want to help people understand that they stand on many people's shoulders to enjoy what we have here and to know that history and to also understand their place in that history.
Right. So what's the best way Brian and I could get clients interested in adopting you as a charity?
Oh, the best way is really for people to come visit us. Mm-hmm. Because again, you know, we're kind of about abstract ideas, and I can talk about us and our mission and how we communicate our stories, but I think it's when you come in and you see it, and you see the museum with kids and see them experiencing it, that you really understand who we are and what we do. So we would be thrilled if you told your clients about us, and then we could invite them in and give them a personal tour, particularly when we have our kids there.
Do you ever do private events?
All the time. Yeah. We have many, many, many private events. And we work with a lot of corporations. Our board members are people, I mean, for example, someone from a large publicly held corporation had their big board meeting at the museum. So we have many, many events like that.
Is your father still with you?
No.
Okay,
he died. Thank you.
You know, if you're carrying his vision on, where do you see you taking the museum in the future? Where would you like it to go?
Well, we are working towards making many of our education programs become national. And right now we go into schools and we have a year-long curriculum that we developed. It's a social studies curriculum based on civics and leadership and all the things that I mentioned. So we're still bringing that model in locally and regionally, but our plan is to take that national. We certainly want to become much more well-known nationally and even globally so that visitors seek us out. That's the vision.
It sounds like you're already much more than a museum. You're sponsoring education and activities mm-hmm. and really fostering the idea of liberty in future generations. Does the museum concept confine you in any way? Or, you know, you're almost like a museum without walls if you're taking it to classrooms. Do you have more ideas along those lines?
Yeah. Well, we have so many discussions about our name. Should we really be a museum? Because that connotes artifacts.
Right.
It's not what we have. That's a big debate. It's been going on for years. We could be Liberty Museum and Education Center. That's probably accurate. We do want people to visit us, though.
Right.
And people will visit a museum more than they will an education center or even a center. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, we go around about that.
Right.
Names are always tough.
They are. It's always very tough.
What do you tell an investor? What kind of return can they expect? Obviously, it's probably more the impact they're trying to make on things.
It is, so. Yes. I think our contributors, at least I hear that they feel that they are investing in something that's a good investment. We don't have debt. We steward our money very carefully. We have an endowment. So we try to run a nonprofit as if it's a business and spend money very carefully. And I think that's important for investors to know. Mm-hmm. We're not there to just spend money. So there's that side of it. But I think also they see the work we do. They see the impact on the kids. We invite all of our contributors to come into the schools with us to see the work in action. We evaluate our work. We have outside evaluation of what we do. We've shown it to be, it's been shown to be effective. And I think that means a lot to people investing money as well.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So,
do you have any planned giving arrangements? I was mentioning earlier that some clients are well-intended but fearful in making a long-term commitment or a mm-hmm. consistent commitment.
We do have some. It's a program we'd love to grow. Mm-hmm. We do talk to our contributors about those options, and we've had some who choose to do that. Mm-hmm. Right now we have a campaign because we're making changes in the building, and we have some legacy gifts already. So people are aware of different ways to give mm-hmm. to help us in our work.
Right. Right. That's great. Making it easy and comfortable takes down one of the two barriers. The other we'll try to deal with in terms of their fear and mm-hmm. their comfort and giving away what they think resources might be needed for their family.
How do you attract more visitors? What's your strategies to do that?
Well, we're not a huge building, so we can't bring in these big blockbuster exhibits that not just attract a lot of people, but attract people over and over again. So someone who's been to a museum will come back to see that particular show. Mm-hmm. We do it with our programs. So we have a lot of programs we do and use that to encourage people to even join as a member, but certainly to come back with their families or for a program in the evening or on a weekend is the best way.
Are there other museums in other cities that do what you do? Are you familiar with, or?
Yeah, they're similar. I think we're unique, though, in the particular way we do it and in our mission. I don't know of any others
That's
quite
good.
Like us.
Great.
So your dad was a publisher.
Right.
And did this idea come from publishing or his work experience? Do you know?
Well, his magazines focused on printing and marketing, and he was a marketing pioneer. He had a magazine called Target Marketing, mm-hmm. and was like a direct mail pioneer.
Okay.
So, and also really understood print and color and fonts. He loved that kind of design.
Right.
So he had a great time working with exhibit designers and all those things. I think he drove them a little crazy because he was so opinionated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what's your background and how did you
in education
decide? Okay.
Yeah, so I came from a very different perspective. Mm-hmm. I think together we were a great team mm-hmm. because my experiences with kids and in the classroom and with teachers and education and his from business and marketing and kind of put them together, and it's a blend of the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fantastic.
How did he drive that idea, like when he thought of this? It's probably a lot of work from, you know, to get an idea to where you're at. You actually have a building and a museum and programs.
Yeah. He was very driven. And he, and you know, he started this really after a very long career. So he was working well into his 80s.
Is that right?
With as much passion and energy as someone 20 years younger. And he just, you know, never gave up. He had a vision and was determined to see it through.
Good for him. So you're carrying that legacy on.
I'm doing my best.
What else would you like people to know about the museum?
Well, as I said, it's a different kind of experience, and we hope people will come by. I mean, a lot of times people come, they're not sure what to expect, and we have this wonderful film in the beginning. It's about liberty. Again, it's experiential, and we invite people to come in. There's no charge, so that's a way someone can maybe test the water and see if they'd like to invest maybe a few dollars and a little bit of time visiting us. And I think from there, there are a lot of things to see. In addition to the exhibits we have, we use glass art in our exhibits. Glass is fragile, it's strong, and we can see it as a metaphor for liberty. It also adds another element to exhibits. And it's very interesting art form, so people are fascinated by that as well.
How long do people tend to stay in a museum? All right, no, we call it a museum.
It's a museum. Yeah,
so.
Typically about 90 minutes, but it depends. Our school tours, our guided tours, are usually 90 minutes, and then we offer something called a museum learning experience, which is a longer experience because there's a workshop afterwards tailored to a class.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite program there, or favorite program on the horizon?
Well, my favorite is our Young Heroes program. So when we opened, to this day, it's gotten worse, but you know, so many years ago, we were aware of how many bad news stories you read about young people, mm-hmm. and yet we knew of so many good stories. And we thought we need to showcase and honor those kids. So 15 years ago, we started that. And as a result of that, we started going into classes to encourage more kids to become young heroes and to be honored for that work. So this is our fifth year. We're in 13 inner city schools. We have 8 of those schools are legacy schools. We've been working with them for 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it's very exciting to go into those classes. The kids are excited. We give them a voice. They decide what it is in their school.
We probably have to wrap up here, but okay. Yeah, I really encourage everyone, please go visit the museum. It sounds wonderful. Our next guest is Sandy Borowski, no relation, from Star Tours, Inc. Please join us because, as you know, your money matters.